This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. We were all accounted for. And Mr. Durham, how was your weekend? All right?
Very well, thanks, Pac. Got the Lumberjacks, Lauren and Lewis, helping us out today. Everybody ready to go. And we got 3 good hours set up with Eric McLean, of course, coming up at 8 o'clock. And then Andrew Adelson as well with all the news from another busy Saturday of ACC football. We draw closer to the holiday week after next, but we also draw closer to other things as well, like basketball and all those things beginning here in a couple of weeks. But pretty interesting weekend of football. Notre Dame did not show any ill effects of the Clemson double overtime win, did they? Irish, I thought, were very businesslike at Chestnut Hill on Saturday, Mark.
I thought the Irish were solid. You knew you were going to get a punch in the nose by Jeff Hafley's guys early. They did, and you know what? They responded accordingly. Ian Book continues to play good football, smart, elusive. He runs for 85, throws for 283, not make any mistakes. I thought Notre Dame very businesslike. They gave up some plays. I mean, you knew BC with all the emotion of red bandana and circle the calendar and the Irish coming off that big win. You knew there was going to be the question, and early BC made a statement, but I just thought that Notre Dame did what they were supposed to do. You know, we're the better team. Yeah. We're going to impose our will. Ian Book continues to give you great leadership. Dudes are making plays left and right. There were a few turnovers that I know that Brian Kelly would like to clean up, but for the most part, that's a check. Boom. Move on. Next game. And, of course, the Irish will get 2 weeks to get ready for North Carolina. But I just thought that was very much a business-like performance, kind of like what we've expected from Notre Dame all year. They continue to deliver.
Yeah, and likewise, so did Carolina, right? Just in a maybe more dramatic and compelling way in what ended up being more of a shootout. But, yeah, Carolina and Notre Dame clearly on a collision course now. But really, it's going to be all about how Carolina responds to this. The Tar Heels trailed 3 scores in the second half on Saturday against Wake Forest. Ends up being a heck of a ball game, by the way. Not a lot of defense packed, but if you liked offense, this was your spot Saturday.
Let's clarify that. No defense, which is fine. I mean, hey, I said last week on this show, I said last week on the radio show, in my humble opinion, and I've been wrong a trillion times before, I thought it was going to be the best game in the country involving teams without a number beside their name. And, man, it was a noon kick and grabbed your popcorn. I hope you had it ready because there were points scored left and right. There were unbelievable drives, catches, as you'll find out in wide receiver U. Sam Howell was ridiculous. Sam Hartman was good. I mean, it was just like it was a Big 12 special. It was like, hey, can somebody make a stop? And North Carolina defensively finally did. Down 3 touchdowns in the second half, but a record-setting day for Sam Howell, a record-setting day for North Carolina. Dave Clawson and his guys will look back at that one and go, son of a gun, man, we're up 3 touchdowns. We got to close the deal, and didn't. But tip of the hat to Sam Howell, North Carolina. That game was goofy. Now, that's 59-53. And I saw some crazy stat yesterday in the history of college football. Now, this is year 151. There has never been a 59-53 final, ever.
That's right. Ever. Scorigami put that out. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. I was like, well, that's something you don't see very often. So there it is, history in the making. But for North Carolina, a great win. And like Notre Dame, they'll get 2 weeks to get ready on a Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. The Irish are rolling to Chapel Hill. And for Wake Forest, you got to regroup. And tip the cap to North Carolina as they win the mythical, and I emphasize mythical, Food Lion Cup. They go undefeated in the state of North Carolina. So there it is.
Wait, hold on a second. Wait, why do we have to clarify mythical? Do we have some sort of implication over the weekend where?
No, okay. No. I'm saying it's mythical until we get the Food Lion executives to buy in on the idea and somehow tie it into ACC Network where there's money involved. So until then, I'm going to call it the mythical Food Lion Cup. I mean, the Food Lion executives and the ESPN executive should have been all over this last week when we dropped this on everybody that moving forward, whether they get the deal done or not, I will call it the Food Lion Cup in the state of North Carolina. And Wake last year, if this thing was in play a year ago, the Swiss would have been the defending Food Lion Cup champs. But North Carolina beats NC State. North Carolina beats Duke. North Carolina beats Wake. So therefore, the mythical Food Lion Cup goes to the folks in Chapel right. Hill.
Miami Virginia Tech delivered two-pack. Thought that was a really good ball game, really entertaining game. It was weird to watch it happen, though, because Miami kind of had it at arm's length and Virginia Tech had some chances, and it just it never formulated into the that one tight game, I thought.
Well, forget chances. Virginia Tech's up double digits in the second half. How about close the deal? Same thing with Wake. Right. I mean, close the deal. You're up double digits in the second half, and Virginia Tech at home. I know Liberty was a gut punch, but this was one you circled. You were favored, according to smart folks out in the desert. Miami comes in there wounded, obviously, 13 guys out due to COVID, as Manny Diaz said afterwards. Yeah. Hey, we were fortunate just to play the game. It was an important game. The Canes, of course, after their huge comeback win by double digits in the fourth quarter at NC State the week before, find themselves basically in the same boat, double digits down second half. And for Manny Diaz in Miami, we've talked about can you close? You know, can you sweep everybody to get to the chance to maybe kind of roll into Charlotte? Those last two games, right. Wes, you know what? Last year, they don't win those games. In fact, last year, they didn't win those games. They found themselves behind after the third quarter, didn't win a game last year. They go back-to-back on the road, double digits down at NC State, at Virginia Tech. And for Miami, you just found a way to win. To me, that's how you establish a program from the ground up. You figure out ways to win. The flip side is Virginia Tech's got to be looking in the mirror going, man, alive, what else, right? I mean, you had the lead. All you've got to do is close, and you didn't. And so, you know, you're at home, you're the favorite, you're up double digits. That's one of those kind of games you just got to win.
Yeah, we'll get to all the ball games. Virginia, of course, beat Louisville and Charlottesville. Cardinals impacted by players that were unavailable. Certainly, Javian Hawkins, 2-2 Atwell. NC State, another strong start, and then beats Florida State in Raleigh on Saturday night. Sets up another big weekend of ACC football that starts on Friday this week with Syracuse's visit to Louisville. And so we got a week to go there. We did have the Women's Soccer Championship crowned yesterday, PAC. Florida State, Mark Kerkorian's team, beat North Carolina to remain undefeated. 3-2 the final. You got the match you had talked about. And I got to be honest with you, the Noles took an early lead, but it ended up being very compelling as well.
Well, I told you last week, I don't root. The only thing I root for in sports is the Dodgers to lose. I'm already 0-1 in 2020. But I was rooting for this matchup in the ACC Championship. Two undefeated teams, 1-2 in the country. Forget the league, in the country. Two incredible programs. We know about North Carolina's legacy. But what about Florida State now? They've won two of the last three and seven of the last 10 women's soccer championships. They scored two goals in the first 6 minutes. Life's rolling. And then they held on. They cruised. They win 3-2. A lot of points, which is great. I love that in soccer. But these are two phenomenal programs. But Coach Kerkorian has just built a beast in Tallahassee. And the league, as we keep talking about, both the men and the women, we'll get to the men later on in the show too. There's such great soccer in this league. And when you got the two best teams in the country playing for a conference championship, they both delivered. But congratulations to Florida State. We've known about North Carolina's great legacy of women's soccer. Florida State's got that going too. Like I said, seven of the last 10 ACC titles. You can find them in Tallahassee. Impressive.
Yeah. Clara Robbins, by the way, was the tournament MVP on the ladies' side, and she will join us on this program tomorrow. We look forward to visiting with her as kind of the fall campaign of soccer ends. And we'll see, you know, kind of how they feel about the potential of, you know, competing again on a smaller schedule in the spring and seeing what that leads to national rankings as well. You mentioned Sam Howe. And I got into this the other day. I got into this yesterday a little bit with someone talking about the game. And I said a little bit of defense got played because Chas Surratt did force the sack on the fourth down play at the end of the game. So that's a little bit of defense.
Wes, 1,350 yards of total offense, and you're going to talk about defense? Come on, please.
I'm not going to talk about defense. But here's what I'm going to say. When's the last time you saw a ball game in this conference that got as wide open as that one?
Well, that's
Have
my
we
point.
Ever seen a game get as wide open? As, It's unbelievable.
When you type in the word North Carolina and Wake Forest, the D is not necessary, right? You don't need the letter D. I loved watching the game. Now, I know there's people that sit there and go, this is two-hand touch football. The plays that were being made in that game, and I kid around about the defense, but there were plays made where the defense was actually in the absolute perfect position, and yet there was still an offensive play made. I mean, both of these quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, I mean, these dudes put on a clinic Saturday. And, yeah, I know there's some folks that don't like Big 12 football first to 60 wins, but this thing was goofy, man. This thing was absolutely bonkers. But Sam Howell was awesome. And Hartman was too. I mean, they just traded blows. But, you know, Wake's up three touchdowns in the third quarter. You're thinking, well, is it another great win for Dave Clawson? I mean, you got to close the deal. I'm sorry. When you're up 21 on somebody in the second half, that's got to be a W. Was it? Sam Howell, out of sight. Out of sight.
The Sam Howell becomes the first player in ACC history to throw for six and run for one in a conference game.
Well, you want to tell me? You talked about all that defense a second ago. What are you talking about? 550, seven touchdowns? Okay.
The run was the game winner, by the way, for the Tar Heels.
We could do a wide receiver U with just this game alone. Now, I know when we get to wide receiver U, we're going to have to – we spread the wealth to everybody here. But I'm telling you, as I'm sitting there watching all these games, I got my notepads for all this other stuff I'm working on. I got to think for a column, WRU. And like every it seemed like every 2 minutes I was writing down, oh, there, got to put that one down. Brown, got to put that one down. I mean, it was just goofy what was going on. But it was incredibly entertaining. It's a shame we didn't have a crowd for that one, because that one was just one of those that just needed – you know, live people in the stands would be going, oh my goodness, did you see this play? And Wes, not only was it big plays, but look at the scoring drives in this game. I think there was like 15 touchdowns, and 12 of the 15 drives, I mean, I'll screw this thing up, were drives of over 60 yards. I mean, was it one of those things where, hey, 75-yard touchdown pass, yeah, you got one of those, but teams were just driving. It was like boom, 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 boom. The precision on the offense is on both sides were so good that the poor defenses didn't have a chance in this game. They didn't have a chance.
The two higher passing days in ACC history belong to Deshaun Watson, who threw for 580 yards against Pittsburgh in 2016.
A loss.
Loss. And Stephen Morris, who, by the way, if you had 20 guesses as to who had the second most yardage in an ACC game, would Stephen Morris be on your list?
Wes, if Stephen Morris rang my doorbell at 10:05 this morning and said, I'm going to give you Will Muschamp buyout money if you can guess my name, I'd say, dude, I have no idea who you are. When I saw that stat, I was like, I gotta look this up because I have no idea who that guy is.
I don't know who 713. I don't know who had 713 in the Muschamp mentioned lottery, but they're the winner in our.
And God bless them. Let me tell you something. God bless them. I know it's not our league, but that is why.
Here it is. Wait.
I want you to say it.
You say it every time when something like this happens. If somebody's going to do what?
I don't know what that is, but I was just going to say that this is why
they pay you not to work. Yeah. They pay you not to work, right?
The goal of – I've said this for 25 years on radio. The goal of every American worker is to be suspended with pay. And Will Muschamp, I know, hey, he's a good dude. I like him. He's funny. Believe it or not, he's got a great sense of humor, and he'll land on his feet. Doesn't have to land on his feet. Somebody's going to pay him $13 million not to lose. I mean, where do you sign up for that? Why can't we get deals like that, Wes? Why is it that it's only coaches that get the deal that, hey, you're so lousy at what you're doing, we're going to pay you not to come to work? I mean, is that a great country? If I was Will Muschamp, I would have had a bigger party than Dustin Johnson last night. I said, oh, thank God. I don't have to give up 60 again. They're going to pay me $13 million not to run through the smoke to get killed at Williams-Brice. I'm in. I am in. Can we double it? Can I promise I'm not going to come back the next decade? You can give me another $13 million? I'm telling you, it's the greatest gig in America. I used to make fun of Charlie Weiss, and then I realized, what am I doing? Charlie Weiss is a god. Charlie Weiss figured out how to do it at two places at once. He had Notre Dame and Kansas writing him a check to say, listen, we're going to give you a ton of cash, but here's the deal. Whatever it is, when we kick off on Saturday, don't be around here. Just go away. Go away. How great it's the greatest gig ever. It's the greatest. We're going through a pandemic. Every athletic department in the country is facing financial strife.
Yes.
So here's an idea. Let's pay somebody $13 million not to come to work and help us out. You tell me, we're in America. We got the greatest country in the world where that can happen. I just wish it happened to radio and television talent. Listen, Pac, you're so awful at your job. Here's what we've decided to do. You know that contract you signed? We're going to pay you not to be on the air. Please, can I get that job? I beg of you, can I get that gig?
Thanks.
I'm done.
All right.
Suspended with pay. It's the deal. All
Monday
of us.
Show.
Root for it. It's our goal.
Monday show is underway. Eric McClain at 8 o'clock. Andrew Adelson joins us after 9. We'll talk to both of them about the weekend and the ACC and what to expect as we head into this Saturday before Thanksgiving schedule. It features some interesting games, by the way. News out of Syracuse on Jim Boeheim. All that and more coming up in your calls at 844-SAY-ACC. And we are underway on a Monday. The Irish were very businesslike. Miami, last 35 minutes, kind of flexed a little bit. De'Aaron King, another impressive Saturday. We'll talk about that more when Packer Durham continues right after this.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Dog walking music, Monday morning. The boys got their new album out, Power Up, just released on Friday. Got it. Awesome. Tremendous. 844-SAY-ACCN. And let me just tell you, Wes, after that rant about the goal of every American worker should be to be suspended with pay, our boss, our boss sends me a text and says, I would expect Pac to get a bill instead of a buyout if he ever gets let go. That again, that's the world I'm living in. That's the uphill struggle I face every day trying to reach my goal. The bosses are already alerting. Someone please tell Packer that if he's let go, he's going to pay us. We aren't paying him at all. Not a dime. Not a stinking dime.
Yeah.
All right. We get back to normal here. Right. Serious note from the weekend, though, Wes. Listen, COVID had a field day on college football last week with 15 games getting postponed and or canceled. We have the countdown to hoops coming up right around the corner. Coaches have not been immune to this either. Needless to say, we had Sam Pittman from Arkansas, not coach over the weekend. Tom Izzo, of course, tested positive for COVID. And all of a sudden, you got news from the ACC last night that COVID has affected our conference as well.
Yeah, Jim Boeheim announcing last night in a statement, as part of our routine COVID-19 health and safety protocols, I, along with my team and staff, are tested for COVID-19 multiple times each week. Following our most recent testing, I was informed that I had tested positive for COVID-19. I immediately began my isolation period at home. I'm not experiencing any symptoms at this time and will continue to monitor my health closely as advised by the medical staff. Thank you for all the well wishes. I look forward to getting back on the court with my team. It was shortly announced after this statement that one other member of the Syracuse basketball program had also tested positive for the coronavirus. So Syracuse, who's supposed to open against Bryant on the 25th, you know, right now does not have their Hall of Fame head coach, at least for the next, I'm going to guess, week approximately, maybe a little more after that, depending on the isolation and exact date of testing. And that would also fall under the university's protocols as well. So that being said, we're now into basketball with some of these absences. And you said it, Pac, COVID don't care. It's touching everybody at this point.
Yeah. First of all, we wish everybody a speedy recovery. Obviously, that's number one. Your health and safety's got to be priority number one. Number two, tomorrow is Jim Boeheim's birthday. So an early happy birthday to Coach. And again, hopefully he's going to be okay. And we'll see him back on the sidelines on the court ASAP. But it does lead to a concern of hoops. I mean, hey, we're inside 10 days, man. It literally is right around the corner. And you had Rick Pitino over the weekend saying we should push this thing back. And I don't know what the answer is, Wes, but I know this. When it came to college football, the big question was for me, can we get to this starting point? Can we start the college football season? And I told you before in the middle of the summer, if we can get 8 games, I'd sign up for it and ask no questions. If we don't get to a conclusion to college football, that would be disappointing, obviously. But, you know, the fact that we got to the starting point, I thought was the most important thing. To me, basketball is the exact opposite. I don't know when the starting point is, whether it's 9 days from now, next month, January. I don't know. But I do know this. Unlike the football, we must have a conclusion to basketball. To me, basketball is the exact opposite of football. We had to find a starting point for football, but given the fact of what we went through in March, this past March, and no March Madness, college basketball desperately, desperately needs a conclusion, whether that be in March, April, May, whenever. We got to have a tournament. So if we have to push it back, so be it. If it starts on time, so be it. I expect there to be disruptions, just like we've had in football. Why wouldn't we? I mean, like I said, COVID doesn't care. It doesn't care if you're ranked, unranked, rich, poor, power five, group of five, doesn't matter. But this is going to be a fascinating couple weeks to see college hoops roll the ball out and hopefully get started. But I'm more concerned about the end point as opposed to the starting point for college hoops.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the other part about this is that, remember back in the summer, I think in July, we were talking about the football season, and you asked me, would we start the football season on time, right?
Right.
I'm starting to waver a little bit about whether or not you can start the basketball season on the 25th. I mean, some are going to do it. Some are going to play. I'm beginning to wonder if the, you know, here again, the NCAA, who, you know, and I will profess I'm not a big fan of at this point for some of the legislation and some of the management techniques, but if they say you have to play a minimum of 13 games to qualify for a tournament, I understand that some teams want to play MTEs and they want to play non-conference games and things like that. And if they're of local variety, sure, no problem. But I think right now, traveling a team out of a time zone, given kind of where the virus is, and this is not a political, it's just talking about where the stats are on the virus pack, I think you might be asking for trouble. I just think you're going to welcome a higher chance of an infection rate hitting your basketball team, of which we've already talked about. If, you know, these teams travel and one person in that travel party comes back positive, the contact tracing potentially could wipe a team out for 2 weeks, right?
No doubt. Right.
So I'm beginning to wonder if the November 25th is the start. Is that realistic? And if so, what kind of game is it? Like, if you're getting on a bus and going 2 hours to play, that's different than. And look, I think air travel for the most part has been okay, and I've flown 3 or 4 times. But I would say that you're getting on a plane and traveling a time zone away to play a game and interacting and that kind of thing. You know, where do you stand on that, right? Where do you run the risk if you're traveling to a state that the infection rate is high or the testing rate is high? I mean, all those things come into play. And basketball does not travel in a silo like football does. You and I know football teams travel in silos. It's their own self-made charter, bus, whatever. Basketball tends to do it in a little different way sometimes. So, yeah, I think there has to be some concern about the equity of the start and how long can we go before we have to have something of a shutdown or a pause in a schedule because the team's not able to play for 2 weeks.
Well,
let me add this too. Sure. Look at what's getting ready to happen late with football on the reset of a football schedule. I mean, the Southeastern Conference today is going to release the way the season's going to end, right? It sounds like. They're going to reset the way they're going to finish their order. Pac-12, I mean, they took two teams that 72 hours ago didn't know they were going to play and played them yesterday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have to get to some of this, I'm afraid, before we're done.
Yeah, and like I said, for football, the key was the starting point. We got there. Everybody stayed upright the best way you can. If we can get a conclusion, tremendous. If we don't, hey, you know what? If you told me, hey, and snap your fingers, the college football season is going to end at the end of our show, while we would all be sick and disappointed, you'd sit there and go, hey, yeah, but you know what? At least we got a sample, right? The kids did a great job.
That's it.
And we got a sample, and it stinks that we can't come to an ending point. Nobody's rooting for that. For hoops, like I told you, to me it's the exact opposite. If we start in 9 days, great. If you tell me, hey, we got to push this thing back, Rick Pitino style, and it doesn't start till January, so be it. But I'm more concerned for hoops that we get to the end. Not necessarily it's got to start November 25th. Now, the cool thing about starting in 9 days is for the most part, all the schools have their students saying, hey, after Thanksgiving, go home. So at least you know your campus kind of has a natural bubble setting for your student athletes, right? I mean, who are still on campus trying to participate, that you don't have to worry about that part of it. And so that is a good thing. But I do think you got to be smart with this thing. And you just can't be so hard-headed that, hey, November 25th is going to start whether you like it or not. You've got to be flexible. We've talked about this ad nauseum for 6 months. So where this thing goes in college hoops is going to be a fascinating story. But like I told you, Wes, if it means we got to push it back, so be it. You got to be safe and healthy here. Be smart.
Yeah, you're right about that. Let's pivot to Blacksburg on Saturday. Miami got Virginia Tech in a 25-24 win. Second straight win for the Canes when trailing through three quarters. They were 0-5 in these type ball games last year. Derek King, once again, very solid. 255 yards of passing on 24-38. Had a throwing score and a running score. To me, Cameron Harris, 63 yards on 14 carries, kind of shows that Miami wanted to get that run game back. Now, it's not an overwhelming run number pack, but it's a better number than maybe it had been the last couple of weeks.
I'm going to give you a stat. I was messing around with this yesterday because I was just curious and I stumbled across something. Virginia Tech, again, I've already emphasized, you're up double digits at home. You got to close. I mean, there's no excuses. Yep. You got to look in the mirror and say, hey, that's on us. We got to win the game. And there was a stat that we threw on everybody at the end of last week leading in the game, and now you add one to it. Virginia Tech has now lost 11 of the last 12 versus AP top 10 teams. And I read that stat multiple times Friday, watched the game. Yesterday I was messing around. I'm thinking, you know, losing to a top 10 team is not shameful. I mean, you beat somebody in the top 10, you got a pretty good club. So the fact that the Hokies have lost 11 of 12 against the top 10, to me, is not shameful. Yeah, you want that number to be better. I get it. But I'm going to give you a number that's going to really surprise you. In the last 10 years, Virginia Tech against ranked teams at home, they've won one game. They are 1-10 against ranked teams at Lane Stadium since 2010. And the only win was last year against number 22, Wake Forest. Now, when you have a program as proud tradition as Virginia Tech, as great as the home crowd is at Lane Stadium, great environment, great everything, that is a very telling number to me. At home, against a ranked team, you are 1-10. 1-10. Virginia Tech at home since 2014 is 26-17. Wes, we're talking about Lane Stadium. And when you ask a college, a true college football junkie, hey, give me the best two or three home field advantages in the league, Death Valley, when Florida State's rocking, and Lane Stadium, right? Those are three no-brainers. Just let that marinate a second. Yeah. 26-17 at home, period, and 1-10 against ranked teams at home since 2010. That is not good enough. I'm sorry. I mean, at home, when you're a football school, you're supposed to have better numbers than that.
The storyline that is developed before the game with the unavails, and then after the game, Manny Diaz talked to Eric Wood about just how close they came to not playing the ball game in Blacksburg, too.
I mean, we were on the brink, Tim. You know, the players' attitude, I thought, was the most telling. I mean, they wanted to play, and we were right on the brink at some position groups of whether we could even function as a team. Some guys had to step up. We were just really down on numbers at offensive line. And, you know, look, it makes it hard to practice, makes it hard to do anything. But no one cares, right? You can play a game and there's no excuses. Virginia Tech has certainly encountered equal, if not more, adversity earlier in their season with what happened to their defense. So, you know, we brought the team and the players came here to win the game.
No excuses. Line them up. Next man up. Great win for Miami. That's, and they dropped in the AP poll.
Well,
unbelievable.
Yeah, well, and you know what? The resilience of that football team, the one at Louisville who, without Hawkins and Atwell, got on the field. Chandler Jones also missing some of those guys on defense yesterday, or Saturday rather, for Louisville. It just talks about kind of where we are as we work toward the end of November. Quick break. Don't forget we've got another triple header for you coming up on Saturday. Three ball games starting at high noon. We'll be at the Fabled Horseshoe on the West Campus in Durham for Wake Forest and Duke's 101st encounter in football. Roddy Jones, Taylor Davis, join me for the broadcast. Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, 4 o'clock. Chris Cotter and Eric Wood on the call there. And then ACC Network Primetime Football presented by GEICO. Georgia Tech will be at number 12, Miami. And Tim Hasselbeck, Dave O'Brien, and Alex Chappell on the call there. Saturday night in primetime right here on ACC Network. Streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, more of a recap of the football weekend. The Wolfpack got a huge start from Bailey Hockman and Thayer Thomas. And we'll also check in on the Cavaliers' resurgence against the Bill. Back after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. More football recaps. Again, Florida State's women's soccer program out of sight. The men's tournament got underway for soccer. Some surprises there, too. We'll get into all of it today. Eric McClain coming up here at the top of the hour for his accounting and breakdown of the weekend as well.
All right, let's go to Chestnut Hill Saturday afternoon where Notre Dame and BC kind of exchanged some punches early, and then the Irish settled in, Mark, and yep. I thought were very businesslike in picking up the win against the Eagles.
Yeah, other than a few turnovers here and there, which I said Brian Kelly will have to clean up, I thought this showed the experience in that locker room. You know, we had McKinley on last week, and he talked about that senior leadership inside the room. You needed it this weekend because you're coming off the emotional win. Yeah. BC was fired up to see it. They jumped you early. You took their best punch, and then you went, okay, cool. Now let's play football. And Notre Dame lined up, ran over them. And, again, Jeff Hafley and his guys have done a tremendous job this year. But the more talented, more composed team won the football game.
I thought Ian Book, another fine performance. Different than the one he had in the ball game against Clemson, but Pack just as good from a standpoint of production.
Well, I thought the big similarity of the two games is he makes plays. He extends plays with his legs. BC looked like they had him trapped a couple times. He got out of it. And again, smart with the football. You expect that from a fifth-year senior. He did the same thing against Clemson. He did the same thing against BC. And again, the Irish 8-in, right. 8 wins, open date. You get ready for the road trip to North Carolina in 13 days or whatever it is, 12 days, on a Friday of next week.
By the way, Brian Kelly, 100 wins as the head coach at Notre Dame, and he needs 6 to get Rockne. And Tim Beret, our buddy, tweeted out that they went out and win the national championship, he will get Rockne. How about that?
You think Brian would sign up for that right now? I think so. I think he'd go for that. But there's still work to be done. I mean, a road trip to North Carolina, a road trip to see those folks in Switzerland at the end of the year. You got Syracuse stuck in between. Notre Dame can see it. Listen, they got a one-game lead on getting to Charlotte, so life is good. But I think they're thinking bigger than that. Yeah, you'd want to win the ACC title, but I think they're thinking college football playoff and, as you pointed out, perhaps a national championship.
Let's get to Brian Kelly after the ball game, talking about his 100th win with the Irish.
You know, 100 wins, I was going to say it felt like 100 years, but 100 wins is not something that I spend time thinking about. I will when I'm, not coaching anymore. It means I've had a lot of really good players, a lot of really good coaches, and have been really fortunate to be here at Notre Dame that long. It's difficult to win that many games at Notre Dame. And so I'm really, really fortunate to have the longevity here. And you got to win that many games. You know, that's kind of where you got to be if you want to still be here at Notre Dame coaching. So I guess that's the perspective that I have at 100 right now.
All right, so there's Brian Kelly off 100 wins. And I'm going to be very interested to watch Notre Dame play this out here. They are they're a talented team, Pack. This is a talented – not that we didn't think they were, but this team's kind of got all the things I think you need to make a run at this deal. It's going to be very interesting, especially if we get another Notre Dame Clemson in Charlotte for the ACC championship.
Well, I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, the thing that you're excited about is you've seen this team get better offensively. I mean, they sputtered early,
right?
I mean, how often did we have a conversation about, man, we haven't seen them throw it downfield. They haven't done this. They haven't done that. Well, what they have done is played really good defense, smart with the football, great offensive line. They can run the ball, and Ian Book is giving them not good, great leadership. But they have gotten better offensively. So I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're sitting there going, hey, we're exactly where we'd love to be. We're on top of the standings of the ACC. We're number 2 in the country. Our team's gotten better. For the most part, we've stayed relatively healthy other than the wide receiver core. But I think they're getting better as a team. They're starting to sense that, hey, you know what? There is something special going here with all this senior leadership that we've got on the football team. But, you know, they're going to get challenged in Chapel Hill because the Heels can score. But if you're Notre Dame, you could not have scripted a better start to the season.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that part. Let's go to Saturday in Charlottesville because Virginia, kind of bobbing and weaving a little bit here. What were the Cavaliers going to give you? Well, they got you a couple of hundred yards from Brennan Armstrong. Louisville undermanned without Tutu Atwell and Javian Hawkins, certainly. Also, don't forget Hassan Hall banged up, so that meant Maurice Berkeley ends up being the principal ball carrier. Malik Cunningham did all he could, but give Bronco Mendenhall's team some credit, Pack. They were able to find a way to cover Louisville offensively, and Cavaliers find a way to get the win. There's Lavelle Davis. Good to see him back in the lineup.
Yeah, the object's to win the game, right? We gave the stat how the home team, for the most part, has dominated this series, only losing once. But when I heard the news that no Tutu, no Hawkins, you're thinking, man, that's not just two guys out of the lineup. Those are two guys that can break
right.
Humongous plays. I know we spent a lot of time Friday breaking the game down, talking about, hey, are you going to go Kemp or are you going to go Atwell? But, you know, Tutu can only catch it twice, would go 90 both times. You take him out of the lineup. You take Hawkins, who's been fantastic running the football. That was a big loss, personnel loss for Louisville, and having to go on the road. But Virginia did what they had to do. They closed the deal, right?
Yep.
Wake and Virginia Tech this weekend going, yikes, we should have won a game. Virginia got the lead at home, close the deal. It's exactly what Broncos guys did.
Fifth time Louisville's had three or more turnovers in a ball game. Just can't do it. Doesn't work that way. I mean, nope. It just doesn't work. So, Virginia, good win. Cavaliers move on. By the way, Nick Grant's 85-yard interception return, third longest in school history. Antoine Harris, of course, the most recent one to go longer. Carolina fans don't want to talk about it. So, let's move on to NC State, Florida State, Saturday night in Raleigh. Dave Dorn had challenged his team to finish strong during the week. Finish strong. That's what did not happen the Friday prior to when they hosted Miami. Pack started strong against the Canes, just kind of dribbled off at the end. Well, that didn't happen Saturday because they started strong again. And, by the way, they were able to close the deal against the Seminoles. Bailey Hockman, by the way, Pack, I think he's come back and really done a very nice job in his second stint as their starting quarterback.
Yeah, so much was made last week of Dracovic seeing his old guys. How about Bailey Hockman seeing his old guys? He said, yeah, thank you very much. Let's go rock and roll. And, again, the one thing I asked you last week, Wes, is Florida State going to play hard? I forget about the score and all that stuff. I just want to see the Noles compete and get after it, especially after all the announcements made last week. You're going on the road. I figured NC State would be excited. Dave Dorn's got his guys at least upbeat and excited about, hey, we're bouncing back off last year. And for Florida State, this is a work in progress, to say the least. But I will tell you, the best thing about this game Saturday for me was watching it with a bourbon in my hand and my wife at my side and a fire in the fire pit. It was a beautiful, crisp night. And, man, there's nothing better than sipping on brown water in front of a fire with football going on. Just going to tell you that. I know you were working, and I was too.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, I was. I was working.
By the way, controversial move on your part to mention the bourbon before Mrs. P, but there you go.
Let me tell you something. I brought out the double oak for Mrs. P too, and she had never had it. And I gave her own one ice cube. We had a roaring fire. Oh. Game was on outdoors, man. Oh. You know, it's November football when you got brown water, your favorite person in the world, and football on the fire. I mean, does it get any better than that? The dogs at your feet? It does not get any better than that. Just telling you.
Well, sorting out black numbers on a red jersey was fun.
Well, see, you were doing that, and I was sorting out making s'mores for Mrs. P. How about that? It was even.
Oh, my gosh.
It was even.
S'mores.
Mrs. P wanted s'mores. She gets what
Thayer
she
Thomas.
Wants.
Thayer Thomas, 11 catches, 135 yards, 2 touchdowns. Great effort, Bailey Hockman. Another good job for the Wolfpack. We'll see how this develops. By the way, Florida State started either freshman or redshirt freshman in 4 of the offensive line spots, 4 of the 5 offensive line spots on Saturday night, and a true freshman at quarterback in Chuba Purdy. Mike Norvell turning to the youth, he and Kenny Dillingham played hard. Purdy did some nice things for him. They ended up going Wildcat a little bit too. Kind of interested to see what kind of transitions that opens up for Clemson to work on this week too. Remember, we had some Wildcat. We had 2 quarterbacks, all sorts of things for Brent Venables to think about.
Well, I think he'll be just fine. I think they're only a 33-point favorite or whatever it is. But, going back to Florida State.
Yes, sir.
You've reached the point now in the season, it's time to find out what young kids want to play and what they can do. I mean, really, you've reached the point, 3 straight losing seasons, you're going nowhere fast from that perspective as far as 20 goes, but you can really find out right. Who is committed to your program coming down the stretch. So that's what you want to see out of Florida State.
Yeah. The other aspect about this ball game, Roddy Jones called Jarvis Brownlee's interception as WRU during the game. So I hope it makes the list.
I like his chances.
Just saying. All right. When we come back, Florida State did win something yesterday, and it was the ACC Women's Soccer Championship. We'll come back. cover that, get you updated on where the men's card has gone so far, and more when we continue on this Monday edition of Packer and Durham. Eric McClain coming up, 8 o'clock, right here on ACC.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Eric McClain coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. 844-SAY-ACCN. We just talked about Florida State football. The good news is Florida State's got more hardware coming down to Tallahassee. Coach Corian, I'm telling you now, 7 of the last 10, 2 of the last 3. Two best teams in women's soccer in the country were playing for an ACC title yesterday. And Florida State gets out to an early lead. Holds on, wins 3-2, but that is, again, we're spoiled in this league, man. When it comes to soccer, we are absolutely spoiled. Men's and women's soccer, sensational. And tell you what, these two teams didn't see each other in the regular season, Wes. They couldn't wait to see each other for the title, and they put on a show.
Yep. Oh, it's, look, I mean, Florida State got two goals. Clara Robbins, who will be with us tomorrow on the show, scored twice in the first 6 minutes, and Knowles made it stand up as they hold off North Carolina 3-2. Carolina did get a goal, second period goal. Rachel Jones, a penalty kick, and then Brianna Pinto also to cut it to 3-2. But Seminoles were able to stand tall at the end to clinch the title. Look, you said this last week, and it goes again. We're fortunate to get the 1-2 matchup here nationally. Nothing in the spring is promised at this point from a national perspective, Mark, but we needed to see in this conference the power, the two superpowers, if you will, right, play for the championship. And we got that yesterday. And that's a good thing for the ACC. Congratulations to Florida State. North Carolina's had a great year too. But think about just the fact you got what you wanted to see because they hadn't played during the regular season. So you, if you were going to get it on this stage, who knows, might be the only time you get it if there's not anything in the spring that constitutes a schedule to a national run.
Well, it was great for not only the ACC, tremendous for Florida State, obviously winning the title. I thought it was great for women's soccer. I mean, you've got the two best programs in the country that right. just because of this pandemic couldn't see each other in the regular season, and they earned the right to play in the biggest game in the league, and that is we're playing for an ACC title. And then, right out of the gate, I mean, if you grabbed your popcorn late, you got in your chair, it's already 1-0. You're like, oh, what did I miss? Well, you know what? By the time you were complaining about it, it was 2-0. I mean, so Florida State, right from the get-go, they scored twice in the first 6 minutes, take the lead, North Carolina to play catch-up. And again, they pushed it. You knew they would. They're a great team. But give credit to Florida State. I keep saying, you know what? When you win 2 out of 3 in this league and 7 of 10, and there's, you know, baby blue on the other side all the time, it just goes to show you how great a program Florida State's got with women's soccer. And like I said, I thought it was great for the sport that the two best teams in the country played for a conference title, given how crazy and upside down this pandemic's been.
Quick check of the men's bracket from yesterday, the quarterfinals here on ACC Network as well. Most notable, a couple of performances there. Clemson beat Virginia Tech 4-1. Kamani Smith of the Tigers got 3 goals in the first 34 minutes. So a hat trick for Kamani Smith, just the second in ACC championship history. They'll meet Virginia, who beat Wake Forest 1-0. And then on the other side of the bracket, Notre Dame edged North Carolina in overtime. Aiden McFadden by the golden goal on a free kick with 31 seconds left. And then last night, the top seed in the North, Pittsburgh, got a goal from Valentin Noel, Pack, to beat Duke.
Wes.
And 2-1 is the final there.
Wes, let me just put things in perspective. We just bragged about the ladies. The two best teams in the country played for a title. Let me put it in perspective with the men. We had the quarterfinals yesterday. The top 5 teams in the country, not the league, in the country, in order. Pitt, Wake, North Carolina, Clemson, Virginia Tech. All 5 are from the ACC. 3 of the top 5 teams in the country lost in the quarterfinals of the ACC tournament. Wake, North Carolina, Virginia Tech are top 5 teams and lost in the quarters. This league is ridiculous when it comes to soccer, men and women. The men's side will be just as entertaining, moving forward. But again, we are absolutely spoiled rotten in this league when it comes to soccer.
All right, sit tight. When we come back, Eric McClain, that's a Monday staple of Packer and Durham. We'll get a football recap from Mac and see who is on the hype train and get his accounting. Packer and Durham continue right after this.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast.